Okay, I want to talk to you about some case states now. State's a case. A very, very handy way to classify cases has to do with the tone scale. It's a very handy mechanism. You can predict cases, you can do all sorts of things with cases. And the main thing that you can do with cases is solve them. You have to know something about the case, however, to solve it. So it is always a very good idea for an auditor to talk to the case before processing it. I can't recommend this too highly. All right. What are your various case states? Now, if we look over the NOTICEC scale, we'll find out that it is simply an expanded chart of evaluation. Chart of human evaluations, that's all it is. The NOTICEC scale appears in Book 1, Dianetics, Modern Science, and Mental Health, and is demonstrated there in its most, simplest form. And this is the first chart which appears in that book. All right. This tells you, then, that as you go down from no to sex, you run into condensation. Condensation takes place for a very, very good reason. I'm going to point out something to you now that you might not have seen before in processing, and it is simply this. That wall, which is in front of you there, has a very good outward form, doesn't it? Very nice outward form. You see that wall? Nice outward form. It's well constructed. What do you suppose is inside that wall? All right, let's do a little bit better than that. Let's look at any piece of metal which is to hand. All right, now let's look at that piece of metal and let's find out that the outward part of the metal is in very nice form, isn't it? And inside that, we have something that's not quite the same form. In fact, could we say inside that there is some segment of chaos? All right? All right. What do you suppose it does in duplication, in communication? A thetan talks to nothing best. See, he talks to a no form best. That's a complete duplication. See, it's an impulse. No form or particles with it across a distance to a nothingness. Now, that is a communication. That's simply because he is more or less reluctant to have a form himself and considers himself to be a no-form thing and therefore can communicate most easily with no form. Now let's take a rock. A perfect communication requires a duplication at the effect point. So if we take a rock and we look at this rock, we find out it could best communicate with a rock. Isn't that right? Let's look at the outward form of the rock and find that it's very smooth, it's very shapely, it's very nice. And let's look inside the rock. And there we may find a pattern, or we may not. But certainly the molecules and particles and so forth are, in the best sense, a confusion. Is that right? Why do you think that the inside of human bodies are a confusion? Why do you think this pattern of the mind is necessarily then chaotic? It couldn't be because you are used to looking at things with good outward form and no organization in them. And the body then, in trying to duplicate it, has to have a good outward form and a semblance of chaos inside of it. Could this be? Or is the inside of the body very well organized? Let's think about that for a minute. Duplication. If you kept looking at messed objects which had good outward form and chaos inside, would you at last begin to believe that a body with good outward form had chaos inside? And would this have anything to do with your opinion about people's minds? And is it necessarily true? It's not necessarily true at all that a body has a chaos inside of it. Matter of fact, there is nothing more thoroughly organized interiorly than a body. It's terrifically organized. Many people who are doing a duplication on the subject of mess, who themselves has worked as machinists, who have had to confront large masses of mist continually, come eventually of the opinion that a body interiorly must be chaos, and then they believe that the mind itself must be chaos. And here we have answered, I believe, as well as it'll ever be answered, why nobody was ever able to do anything about the mind from a standpoint of simply stirring around inside somebody's wits. He had to look at the mechanics of the universe before he could do something about this. He had to know something about the mechanics of the universe. Let's look at the case who is in remarkably bad condition and find out that he considers the inside of his body to be a sort of a chaos. He really can't believe that he is part of anything but a chaos. He sort of spread out through this and that it has no organization to amount to anything. Here is Freud's unconscious mind. This is why Freud thought you had an unconscious mind, something you didn't know anything about, and which would be buried beneath the surface and which itself would be in chaos. Buried beneath the surface and in chaos would characterize almost any effort to understand the mind. We discover that the interior of the body is not chaos, and the mind itself works in a very, very well-organized fashion. When we exteriorize somebody, we do not have a chaos. You see that? As people have looked at the physical universe, they come to believe, if they never examine what they're believing, that anything beneath the surface is mysterious, can't be seen, is chaotic, is in a confusion, and so forth. All right. Let's just take it from there. This is maybe our first introduction to how people look at the mind and so forth, and recognize that a thetan is running on a basis of he mustn't let himself in on it. Well, isn't this too merely a reflection of this universe? He sees this universe, and this universe says that he mustn't be let in on it. This universe is a mystery. The first order, beautiful mystery, gorgeous mystery, getting all plucked apart and torn to pieces, won't be worth a nickel after a little while. But here it is, a big mystery. Something on the surface, something else underneath it. We go down to hot countries where people are used to being stewed in their own juice, you might say, a lot, and they've been pounded heavily, which is all I'm trying to say, by messed energy. The energy of the sun, the heat of the day, and even at night when it's dark, they're pounded by heat waves and so forth. And we find these people more convinced of the messed universe and convinced of its activities than we find people in cold climes. We find that these individuals would rather figure than think, and that they almost never look. But when they do look, they always know there is something deeply significant and chaotic, and sort of not to be understood under the surface. As they are more heavily pounded by the universe itself, so they are more convinced of the universe itself, so they are in greater agreement with the universe itself. And this universe says that whatever it may appear to be on the surface, it is entirely something else beneath the surface. All right, if you're walking around as an auditor, believing that there is something very hidden about your preclear, you are simply walking around in an agreement with the physical universe that no matter how easy and smooth things look on the surface, there of necessity is some sort of chaos and unconsciousness lying below the surface. So if you could rephrase and realign your attitude toward your fellow, you would recognize that you were dealing with some energy pictures which the individual makes, and which are black, white, green, and purple, contain a lot of perceptions and so forth. There's engrams, secondaries, facsimiles of all kinds, and these things interlock together in such a way as to associate with each other, form a stimulus-response mind. That is the reactive bank. It is not chaos. It is the most interestingly arranged thing that you ever wanted to go into. An individual gets a facsimile, he fits the facsimile along with facsimiles nearest to its kind. And so when an impulse of energy goes through that, he is immediately furnished with that valence to assume which he should take in the given situation. And that is simply a statement of the action of the reactive mind. These facsimiles add up suddenly, give him a valence, and tell him what to be. All right, he can be that thing, and it won before, so he'll win again. You see how simple this is? Therefore, we get the importance of the winning valence. All right, do you see anything chaotic about that? Well, believe me, there isn't anything chaotic about it. But if we've got a lot of facsimiles of the physical universe in its chaos, of bursting stars, of explosions, of all kinds of things, of course we have facsimiles of chaos. But don't fail to differentiate here between something which is a facsimile of a chaos, which facsimile is in very good order, and chaos itself. Because you have a picture of something does not make the picture the thing. All right? Now, a reactive bank. Very well to take things out of the reactive bank and straighten it out, but after we've got through all through straightening it out and so forth, we still have a thinking, operating mind which is composed of facsimiles which go into association one with another, which furnish the individual the winning valence which will see him through the situation with which he finds himself confronted. That's not chaos. All right, let's take the body. The body itself is a mechanism, a colonial aggregation of cells, which is very highly specialized and developed, and which is built along certain lines, and which is basically an electronic structure, a certain piece of space, which is filled in by the illusion of skin, tissue, bone, and so forth. But we find every part of that body functional. We find no chaos. All right, we find this body functional. It's a communication unit. It'll do a lot of things. It'll travel. It's mobile. And so on. It said fantastic that it runs at all. It's the most fantastic machine you ever saw. You take the heart. The fact that one machine could keep on running for 70 years is unthinkable in the field of mechanics. The only machine I know of in the physical universe which would do the equivalent job of the heart with that much motion and so forth is a sundial. All right. It'll tell the time regularly, day in and day out. No other machines I know of repair themselves or do anything of the sort. So this is a biological machine. It's a pretty good machine. Are we finding chaos there? No, no chaos there. Next unit, we find the Thetan's machinery, the gimmicks and the gadgets. This stuff shuffles around. It does this, it does that. And astonishingly enough, is granted beingness with life itself, which is fixed up in such a way that these things have life in them. They actually can have personalities, as you see, when they get into demon circuits and so forth. But each part of this machinery is intended to overcome some difficulty that the Thetan conceives himself to be able to get into, and the main difficulty the Thetan conceives himself to get into is becoming a full knowledge of everything, and this is his main difficulty. If he suddenly became aware of everything there was, suddenly, why, he feels very well that he would go mad right on the spot. It may or may not be that this is the case, but he certainly feels that this is the case. The only way he can provide a game is to select out sides so that he has something to attack and something to attack him. And so he set up this machinery to play games, to transfer him around, to keep him from being bored, to give him mysteries, to solve things, to build things, to do all sorts of things. But in none of this machinery do we find any chaos. Not until we break it all up and crush it all up in a pile or something of the sort do we find anything, but a thoroughly workable, very well laid out, relay attention activated system. He puts his attention on one of these machines and several of them goes into action and so forth. All right, so therefore there's his machinery, and now let's take the individual himself, the Thetan, which is an energy production unit and which worships the very feet of order. Order is the watchword of the Thetan. He confronts chaos and brings order into that chaos. And if there's any ambition he has at all, it is that ambition. Therefore, to libel him as having a mind full of chaos is then an operation which would lead to his enslavement. This would be how you enslave Thetans. Psychology. Man will just have to adapt to his environment. He wasn't adjusted to his environment. Let's all die. Psychoanalysis. He has something down underneath there, you see, which is a complete confusion, which has nothing in it but hate and perversion and barbaric horror. And it's going to get you any minute. Which is a nice game. It's a very nice game. For those that are playing the game. But if you happen to be a pawn in the game, it's not as nice a game. And if you're a broken pawn, God help you. and psychoanalysis was designed for broken pawns. How thoroughly can you break a pawn? That would be how you study that. All right. We look at four things, the four things with which the auditor operates, and we don't find chaos in any one of them, except that the individual has himself assumed the best universe as a winning valence. And when he assumes it as a winning valence, he is, of course, assuming a chaos. But there's a purpose behind his assuming the best universe as a winning valence. Here's your black case. Here's your case that believes he's in chaos. Of course, what's convinced him is looking at this beautiful face order on the wall. You see the order of the face of the wall and the confusion of molecules and electrons which immediately lie back of it. Of course, we study those. We don't find too much confusion. We just find all this statement that you find in the bad book. That's what they call it, isn't it? That Christian book? The bad book, yeah. That it says, chaos, chaos, all is chaos, and it's all composed of infinite chaos, you boob. How do you think you're ever going to do anything out of this? You're just adrift and all messed up, and the only buddy you could build anything was some fellow you're never going to meet, and he's everywhere. You haven't got a chance. You haven't got a chance. See? The only real trouble you find with your individual is when he is bought as his winning valence, the physical universe, in one fashion or another. But, of course, there really isn't anything terribly bad about that. He still has a winning valence. He's still alive. He's still molding. And this is fantastic in itself. And you look outside all this chaos, which he thinks he is being, and you find out he's being part of a facsimile, or he's being part of a series of facsimiles, which build into him enough physical universe so as to keep him from dying. Best universe lives forever, so on. What gets out of order in all this? Just that. Individual gets into valences of various kinds. The winning valences he gets into carry to him a certain number of considerations. And these considerations are all part and parcel of this winning valence. Of course, the valence itself is basically a consideration. Two kinds of considerations he can get into. The one kind of consideration, on the one hand, he can get into a full package. See, he assumes the valence of a tree, and now he knows the considerations of a tree are so on. It grows leaves, it drops its leaves, it doesn't feel good, and they fall, and it doesn't do this, and it doesn't do that, and it does this, and it does that, and it's, you know. He probably feels he should take lots of foot baths so as to water himself real good and so forth. You'd have all these secondary considerations. He probably feels, actually, if he were to put his feet in his food, why, osmosis would serve him much better than to put it in his mouth. A fellow could get into a thorough valence of a tree, but he would inherit at that moment all of the valence of the tree. Now, what of this fellow that's found out that the best winning valence he's ever run into, the only person that really got his way at all in this person's lifetime, was an insane person, huh? Huh? Wasn't he... looked all the way through life, and the only person he found out that everybody fell back from, that respected, they took care of this person. This person obviously had a fine survival potential. Everybody fed him, clothed him. This person didn't have to work. Everybody was worried about him. The person got lots of attention and so forth. Was an insane person. That's a winning valence. All right, so he'd have this big package of considerations. And these considerations would be the considerations, quite incidentally, of an insane person. An insane person does this and does that and does something else and does something else and so forth. But it's just that insane person which he observed in the valence which he's being, you see. So any psychiatrist, poor fellow, trying to lay down a classification of behavior of insanity would have to take into consideration what insane person was his patient being in the winning valence of. And then he would have the classification. All right. So we have another type of consideration. There were two. One is the package consideration. The other is this consideration. Now, this fellow wants to win, so he dreams himself up something. He said, I'm going to win, and therefore I'm going to have, in other words, move around or operate a symbol of some kind or another, or I'm going to be. And he has these two types of consideration. He's going to have or he's going to be. And he's going to be so-and-so, and then he can dream up his considerations for these things. Actually, he can mock himself up a complete valence that he said, no, his valence is going to win. When an individual is no longer able to do this, we consider him unable. When an individual is no longer able to mock himself up a valence which he is figures going to win, and when he has to assume valences which have won, we find this individual, quote, in trouble, unquote, simply because he's fixedly being some survival mechanism. He's not mocking himself up to be a survival mechanism. His survival actually consists of his adjusting the environment to him. Man's predominance on Earth is solely accounted for by the fact that he has adjusted his environment to him consistently. So therefore, as we look over this pattern of mocking up a beingness to be, and mocking up the considerations which it should have, we find then somebody who can also change the thing to be and the considerations to have. You see that? But somebody who is accepted unthinkingly an emergency or something of the sort, a winning valence which he has never consulted, he just grabbed it, he just being it, because it won, he perforce to have done this must have run out of winning valences he could dream up. So we have the difference of an individual being able to set his own goals, he's in pretty good shape, and the fellow who can't, and he has to assume goals already set. All right? We find life, then, is only as complex as it can make facsimiles of, as it can dream up beingnesses to be, and it is complex to the degree that it is trying to, or winning or being defeated in, the race called survival. And life itself is consulting survival, and the principle of survival pervades all of our processes, seen or unseen. An individual who is pressing survival too hard has gotten to the opinion that he must persist with whatever he has and with whatever he is doing. Therefore, he becomes very difficult to change. He is in that fixed valence already, whereby the valence has selected him, he hasn't selected the valence. And if he has done this, then he gets rather difficult to process. But why is he difficult to process? He is simply in a valence, which is sort of life, you know, combined, emergency, that sort of thing, has led him to adopt this valence. He hasn't really selected it or anything of the sort. It's going on a stimulus-response basis. He says, well, Uncle Joe won, I'll be Uncle Joe. See? And the difference with that case and a better case is that that case won't change. As long as he is Uncle Joe, he's in a valence. He's won. He is winning with his valence. Now, the preclear who is easy to process is one who is upscale, and he is able to select, mock up, consider, to meet the actual situation. The one who is bad off has simply assumed a state of beingness which he hopes, God help him, will meet anything he gets into. See? Now, actually, it's a little more complex than that. He sometimes has a half a dozen of these which he changes. And he hopes this half a dozen, you see, will meet all existing situations. Let's say the only valences he had were housewife and mother valences, and he got thrown into the army and put in the infantry and was told to go out and kill men. He's going to have a hard time of it. Somebody else might have been using, you might say, valences he picked up from the women folks around the house, but he goes out, and if he's still very able, why, he just simply mocks himself up as an infantryman and gets the considerations of an infantryman and goes on and uses these considerations as long as he's an infantryman. And at the end of the war, he unshucks this valence and puts on the next one that he thinks is necessary in order to combat that situation. So the ability to change to meet the situation is the criteria here. This is measured against the criteria of survival. All right, different levels of cases and how we process them. Let's find what the compulsive beingnesses are on the case by using something on the order of Procedure 30. What are the compulsive beingnesses on the case? We will discover them. And let's discover, too, that the individual, once he recognizes what he's doing, then has greater liberty to change. We are trying to change the survival potential of an individual. So, if we were to run continuously without consulting his actual survival potential and with altering his opinion concerning his survival potential, we wouldn't win, would we? He has these winning valences to meet the situation because and in hopes of his own survival. That's why he adopted these fixed valences. So let's just take the fixed valences and then not do anything further about it at all. He knows he's being Uncle Joe, and he knows he's being Mother, and he knows he's being this, and he knows he's being that. And let's just run this with no comprehension or understanding. Well, our case might get better. He might. If he accidentally triggered across this one fact, are these things survival potentials or aren't they? This one fact is he is trying to survive. Whatever he's being, psychotic, neurotic, in a complete state of confusion down below the surface, which he thinks is the right way to be, and even being dead, he considers this the right way to survive. Of course, the way not to survive is never to change. You go on a complete, unchanging basis, and you don't survive because the environment changes and you don't. We find the individual who is stuck at 12 on the time track has not changed so as to be 13, and at 45 he is still being 12. He isn't now really surviving. He's succumbing because he's not altering his beingness, his valence, his consideration for new situations. Now his survival potential must be such to him that there's a great liability to assuming a valence of 13 and not very much liability to remaining with this 12. Life has not yet demonstrated to him that he should be other than 12. The individual who's stuck in birth finds a survival potential of one sort or another in holding on to birth, either to challenge mother or to have continually a doctor's care or to do this or to do that. We don't care what, but he's stuck in some kind of a valence in birth. He's stuck in birth. We must consider then that birth has a survival potential, or we must consider that birth is the germ with which he's going to destroy the market. That is the other point of surviving. That does not survive, which cannot change. Therefore, anything you build into it the germs of its own destruction. You have to. Otherwise, it would survive forever. And yet the environment would change and other things would change, but it wouldn't change, and therefore it wouldn't meet its environment. There's nothing quite as silly as a ginkgo tree. It went out a long time ago. You go over to Africa and down to Australia, and you find all sorts of things that are insisting that they have the winning valence. They do have, too. They've moved forward into these times from some forgotten tertiary Pliocene period. And here they are. Right here in present time with the form they had then. It was a successful form, so they never changed it. This is the turtle. This is lots of things. They certainly are not well fitted to the present time environment, or maybe they are. But they built, without introducing sufficiently into the mock-up, the germs of its own destruction. What would happen to the forests of the world if there was no dry rot? What would happen to them? Do you realize that all of Earth would be some thousands of feet deep in trees right this minute? Nothing could rot? Wouldn't that be interesting? Unless trees can dispose of the form which they have as trees, they cannot then be trees some more. The windstorm would come along and blow the tree over, and there the form would be, and it would never perish. There is nothing as horrible to a Thetan as something which will not perish. He will get obsessed with this after a while, if he really wants to be practical on his solution, and decide that, by golly, an awful lot of things better perish just to make sure. And so we get many of Thetan completely fixed, you might say, on the idea of destruction, broad-scale destruction. You don't have to look to the magnitude of Hitler. Let's just look to the magnitude of the civil engineer or the correspondence school gravel spreader that goes out on the highway and messes it all up. He's got to have some ruin around. It's just things have got to be spoiled and got to be ruined, and so he does. Now, this is your level of case. Where is he? How fixed is he? How much has he stuck himself with one of these winning valences?